SBS live streams and podcasts are supported by advertising.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
A new study conducted by members of Charles Darwin University's Faculty of Health alongside Monash University has found that compulsory income management in the Northern Territory is perceived to be ineffective in reducing harm and actually can even contribute to situations of family violence and is incompatible with the needs of welfare recipients. Joining me to discuss this finding is lead author and CDU senior lecturer in professional practice, families and communities, Dr. Stephen Roche. Dr. Roche, thanks for joining us and welcome to NITV Radio.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me and thanks for your interest in this study.
Now, Dr. Roche, before we delve into the findings of your research, can you paint us a picture of a typical recipient of welfare who is subjected to the compulsory income management scheme? I believe the majority of them would be First Nations or welfare recipients in the Northern Territory.
That's right. In the Northern Territory, the vast majority of welfare recipients are First Nations people. And of course, those welfare recipients are located all across the Northern Territory, from urban centres in Darwin to remote and very remote locations. There's currently around 20,000 welfare recipients in the Northern Territory who are subjected to compulsory income management.
Wow, that's quite a big number. Now, your study highlights the perceived ineffectiveness of compulsory income management in reducing harm. Can you elaborate on the main findings regarding its impact on social welfare recipients?
So our study interviewed 26 social services or social sector experts, people involved in managing social services, service delivery, representatives of the Northern Territory government, and the legal and advocacy sectors. All of these people have long-standing insights into the impact of compulsory income management for welfare recipients. What we wanted to know is what they thought about compulsory income management, particularly over time. Compulsory income management's been in the Northern Territory now since 2007. So it's really quite a long-standing approach to social welfare. Our key findings found that compulsory income management was largely viewed as ineffective in achieving the stated policy objectives around reducing social harms and improving the well-being of welfare recipients. There's a number of reasons for this. The first reason really is that the mechanism itself doesn't really change the dynamics of welfare recipients' lives in the way in terms of what they can purchase and buy. And that's because compulsory income management in the form of the basics card, previously the cashless debit card or the smart card, is still a currency that can be used if people want to buy alcohol or they want to gamble, these types of things. They can still use the basics card in various ways. They can trade it. They can. We had reports of being overcharged in a taxi and receiving some cash back, these types of things. So it can be turned into cash relatively readily. Some of the other things that our participants told us were that, you know, it did make life more difficult for welfare recipients a lot of the time, particularly what's called the administrative burden of compulsory income management. So where you need to be engaging with Services Australia or INJU, which is the private company operating the cashless debit card, to be able to manage your financial affairs. And particularly in regional and remote areas, Services Australia and INJU could be really hard to contact. It relied on network coverage. It relied on access to smartphones and apps, things like that. And often Services Australia staff are very hard to engage with face-to-face, less and less available in remote areas. The other thing we found was that in situations where, say, recipients lost their basics card It would take weeks to get a new one. And that would involve often getting support from other services like family violence services to support them to get those basics cards returned.
Also, one of the significant findings of your research is the link between compulsory income management and situations of family violence. Could you explain how compulsory income management contributes to or even exacerbates issues of family violence?
The first thing to say is that the original logic that compulsory income management could reduce family violence is pretty flawed, because the financial arrangements of families isn't a driver of family violence in and of itself. What we found was, and particularly those participants who are working with family violence services, they said, look, we have a number of clients that we support where they've told us that the basics card and the cashless debit card have been somewhat weaponized in their experiences of family violence around financial coercion and exploitation, and being used really as a way to control women. They gave us some very awful examples of men using the basics card as a kind of weapon to increase their level of power and control over victims, and in some cases, you know, levels of coercion where sexual assault and things like that were threatened. It's certainly not the solution to family violence, compulsory income management. It's certainly, could argue from our study, that it's certainly not helpful.
Now, your research also identified compulsory income management as a top-down approach lacking community consultation. How do you envision a more community-inclusive approach to policy development regarding compulsory income management, and what benefits might such an approach offer?
Well, I think, you know, since the Northern Territory Emergency Response, the intervention where compulsory income management was first implemented in the Northern Territory, many, many studies have found that the design of compulsory income management and its implementation has been top down. And that means that it hasn't engaged with welfare recipients themselves, with community leaders, and even other experts in the field, non-government organizations and the Northern Territory government. And what this means is two things. It means that the design of compulsory income management has been poor, leading to some of these findings that we've found. And it also means that people who are affected by it feel very marginalized. They haven't been involved, they haven't been consulted, and they feel like this policy is being done to them and they're not in partnership with these types of policies. In future, strong consultation needs to occur with cultural leaders, Aboriginal leaders, elders, and to get their ideas about what types of things, policies, programs could support communities, welfare recipients to lead better lives, and what could actually reduce social harms. Without their input, there's never going to be a policy that solves these challenges.
Now, the scheme has been rolled out predominantly in rural and remote areas. Do you see this scheme being implemented in regional and urban areas as well?
The history of compulsory income management in Australia is quite long now. We've had regional locations subjected to compulsory income management across Australia for many years. So in some places, it's been withdrawn. The cashless debit card's been withdrawn in regional areas, like the Ceduna area, for example. The regional remote versus urban distinction is interesting. There are different challenges and different ways that income management impacts those welfare recipients. But at the end of the day, compulsory income management looks the same everywhere, in that it's paternalistic, it's telling welfare recipients how to spend their money, how to manage their economic lives, when really, if we take a social rights perspective, that would see welfare recipients in charge of their own lives, in charge of their financial affairs, because they can decide best what they need to spend their money on in their day-to-day lives, on their children and their families and so on.
And your study calls for a policy reform agenda involving genuine community consultation. I know you kind of touched on this earlier, but what specific steps do you believe policymakers should really take to address the complexities of compulsory income management in the Northern Territory and better support welfare recipients?
I think you need to start over. You need to think about what the key social harms are across the Northern Territory for welfare recipients and make sure you understand those and then begin consultation with those key stakeholders. For example, are the objectives of compulsory income management really the objectives that we want to see from a government perspective or a societal perspective? But are there other ways that might be more evidence-based? So if compulsory income management is a way of trying to change the level of addiction or alcohol abuse and use, that kind of thing across society, well, is compulsory income management the best way to achieve that? Most people would argue actually addiction's much more complicated, much more complex than what you can and can't spend your income support on. But we do know that there are a range of evidence-based services and supports that can assist to support people's addictions. You know, I think compulsory income management misunderstands social issues, and that's what our participants in our study have been telling us. And the solution is, right from the start, community engagement, finding out what people think the real challenges are, the real issues are, and what can be done from their perspective to make change.
Professor Roche, before I let you go, any closing thoughts?
I think one important thing for people to realise is that now the vast majority of welfare recipients subjected to compulsory income management are located in the Northern Territory. The cashless debit card's been withdrawn in other states and territories across Australia. The vast majority of welfare recipients left on compulsory income management are in the Northern Territory. And there should be questions asked about why that's the case. Why has compulsory income management been withdrawn in Sujuna? Why has it been withdrawn in Bundaberg area? And then why does it still remain in the Northern Territory? This is an important consideration.
Dr. Roche, thank you very much for taking the time to give us some insights into the findings of your study, a study that shows that compulsory income management may be doing more harm than doing good. It's been a great pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.